Welcome to Secret to My Success. For the next hour, you're going to hear fascinating stories from the people and personalities who found their success in business and in life. Now here's your host, Alan Bornstein.
Good day. This is Alan, Secret to My Success, here with Dawn.
Alan.
Tell me, how was Vegas?
Vegas was fun. It was fun. You know, worked a lot. Would have liked to work more because, you know, I like to work. But it was good. I went to see Love, the Beatles show at the Mirage.
Nice.
Yeah, so that was good. I gambled a little bit. I didn't do too much, which is good. It's a good thing.
Did you, like, win?
I did. I was like, I actually came out 10 bucks ahead.
Wow.
So,
that's,
you know,
pretty impressive.
But I didn't start gambling, like, again, till like, almost the end of the trip, which I was like, oh, I should have started earlier. And then I was like, no, I'm glad I didn't, because it gets you, like, right away, I felt that click, like, oh,
right?
I got to do more, you know?
I used to be compulsive. I would go with an exact amount of money, keep my debit cards away from me, make sure the car had gas.
That's
so
good.
That I wouldn't do anything dumb.
That's a smart way to do it.
It's crazy.
Yeah, so it was good. The auction was good. It was in the convention center. At the Vegas Convention Center, which is huge. I mean, the room that they had it set up in was huge. And Nicole Kidman and Keith Urban showed up. They were there. We check in the bidders. Like, and then there's another spot where the VIP go to. Well, they just walked in like regular people, you know,
nice.
And they sat down next to the guy next to me who was, you know, checking people in. And I was working with somebody.
And he was checking them in and you were checking them out?
No, I was working with somebody and I was like, God, the voice just sounds familiar. Like, it just hit me. So I peeked around the computer like I do, right? And I was like, oh, hi. It was Keith Urban. Her, I didn't really recognize right away.
Really?
But him, I did, because I saw her walk in. She's like super tall, you know?
Right.
But yeah, so that was kind of cool. And then, you know, as soon as they realized they were there, you know, the Barrett Jackson people, the head guy's second hand came down and they, you know, swooped him away and they got the passes. And then I guess she was then there the rest of the weekend, because the pictures that I've seen posted do not look like the ones that she looked like when she walked in that day. They were just like regular, like they just came in like
a little
regular.
Photoshop going on?
No. I mean, she would just, again, they came in, which is cool, like just regular people. You know what I mean? They didn't come in looking for the VIP. They just came to... And to be a bidder or to do whatever they were going to do. And
that's
yeah,
awesome.
So it was cool.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, we need to get going. We actually have a really cool regular guy on our show who's been here before. You said regular, right?
Regular. Regular people.
We have Seth Bornstein. As we're related, one of my favorite first cousins. Seth,
first
how are
cousin.
You?
Thank you, Alan. And one of my favorite first cousins. You too. Good to be here.
Well, you're a good man. I know we've talked before about what you do with economic development and all the different business outreach programs, but we're here to talk to you today about your business, Swimming to Jerusalem. We got to hear about this. Tell us about the book.
Okay. It's a novel I wrote, published just 2 weeks ago. I worked on it over COVID. I had a lot of time in my hands, as many of us did, and I tried to bake bread, and that didn't turn out very well. I watched a lot of Netflix, but I always wrote, you know, for years, short stories, plays. And in my mind, I thought, it's fun to write a story. And it just expanded and evolved. And it took a couple of years, 2020 to 22, early 23. And I had a novel, which I entitled Swimming to Jerusalem. And it was published, like I said, 2 weeks ago. And I'm really excited. It's fiction. Obviously, the novel, and it's gotten a good response the first 10 days, selling on Amazon and Goodreads and places like that. It'll be in local stores here in New York City, and who knows, if it gets some good buzz online, it may go further, but I'm really excited about it, and I've gotten some really good reviews. Kurgis Review, which is a major reviewing agency in this country for 50, 60 years, that was a great novel of New York, and I love that. I love you said that.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
That's extremely
so
impressive. So I have to ask you, because I'm just finishing the first chapter. Unfortunately, it takes me forever to read. I love the cover. I love the outside of the book. Just first chapter was identifying characters. It was pretty cool. Did you, some of your motivation come from you being a polar bear member and swimming in the ocean in the middle of the freezing?
Well, I'm a swimmer more than a member of any swim club. I swim. I am a really terrible swimmer. I've swum since I was a young kid. Always slow. I love going to the ocean. I live in New York City. I go to Coney Island, Brighton Beach, swim me around slowly, and I've been in competitions. But the book is less about swimming and more about families. And swimming in it is more of a metaphor than anything else. My character is a swimmer, much better than me. He's really fast. I'm really slow. But the story is, it's about a family over 35 years. A young man who was born in Paris. His parents were kind of nutty. He moved to Israel as a young child, about 4 years old, where he grew up with his mom and dad and brother and cousin and his aunt and uncle in Jerusalem in the 1970s. And then when he was 12 years old, his mother and father, they moved to New York City, to Brooklyn, and which he was not happy living in New York as a teenager, leaving his cousin and friends and family in Israel. And he's a party guy. He doesn't take himself seriously. And he has a good time in high school, cuts classes, goes to clubs, fake IDs, has a really good time in this late 70s New York City. And he flunks out of college. Got a scholarship for swimming, flunks out, ends up back in Israel. He joins the military. And this is 1982. And 1982 in Israel, the military was involved in some terrible actions on the northern border near Lebanon. And my character's involved in that. It changes his perspective about life. And the story begins at that point where he sort of does know what comes next. And the next is he meets a woman in Paris. He's busking on the street playing guitar and follows her back to New York. And that's the story. It's told in alternating chapters, flashback, present. And he ends up with a family he never thought he had, a job, a career he never thought he had. But he still has memories of difficult times in the Lebanese border with his cousin. And that's the story. It's about parents, children and parents, fathers and sons, friendships, colleagues. It unfurls nicely, I think. My reviewer said, it's great dialogue, very witty, and a really warm story. And, I think when I write, people ask me, I know the whole story at the beginning. And honestly, I had no clue where it was going. One of my best writing teachers in high school, Mrs. Joan Rosen, who was very smart, very sophisticated. My funny story is I wasn't eligible for a class. I was going for people in the A classes. I was in the B classes. But I asked if I could take it. She said, sure. My first time I did a short story for a class, she asked me to stay after class. And I was nervous because I used a curse word in my story. I thought she'd reprimand me. Everybody left the classroom. She turned to me and said, Jeff, this is a beautiful story. And I was so overwhelmed because it was the first time an adult told me my writing was good and talked to me like an adult. I was 16 or 17. And she spoke for a long time. And she said to me, I never forgot, was when developing stories, let your characters tell you what they want to do. And that was like, it was a wonderful revelation because I always thought about that in writing Swimming to Jerusalem. When I began the story in early 2020, I really didn't know where my characters would take me, how many characters there would be. And it evolved over 2 years. And they really told me what they wanted to do. And some people have asked, oh, is he based on you? And not really. There's no one in the book based on, except for one character that someone knows me very well will know one person is just like one person who was in my life.
Your brother.
Other than that, exactly.
Yes.
But everybody else is totally a composite, an aggregate of people, places, things I've experienced, but not my story. And one thing about being a writer is you have to, if you really want a good character, they may do or say things you as a person would abhor, would hate to do or say, but it's not you you're writing about. You're writing about someone else. So my character it's certainly not like me. None of the characters are.
Is your main character your alter ego? I mean, this guy's a stud.
No, it's not, absolutely not my alter ego. It's someone who I find difficult to work to. If I met him on the street, he'd probably be kind of a jerk.
Okay.
But there are moments where he's very wonderful. The moments where he's an arrogant person, a little self-centered and vain. But all the characters have good and bad. One thing my writing teacher said, every character you write in fiction must be multidimensional. If they're one-dimensional, they're boring, because people are not one-dimensional. And it's so true. People you find interesting are people with different character traits. They may have some wonderful moments and funny, and then become very dark. And that's what makes people, human nature, interesting. If we all were the same all the time, every time, our whole life, we'd be really boring people to be around. So I remember that all my characters, even the characters who aren't major characters, I worked on them too. They have to have a little tiny bit of differences in the few lines they may say. So it's definitely not my alter ego, Alan. I promise you that. It's not my family. You know, we never lived in Israeli family there, but never lived there. I was never a great swimmer. I'm a terrible swimmer. And I never lived in places my characters lived in or did the kind of work they do. So it's different. And I never had a son. It's about main part of the story is that my main protagonist has a son. And you really can't understand why the son is different than he is. And as the father of daughters, I had to make all that up because I have no clue what it's like to have a son. You do, Alan, but you were the one of your son, so you don't understand what fathers and sons are like. I don't, so I made it all up. And I hope it's realistic in some way to somebody who does have a son.
That's pretty amazing. Let me ask you, so you've written plays before. What was the difference between putting together a play for a stage and sitting down and writing your first book?
You know, plays are different because it's all dialogue. And a novel is a combination. My novel has a lot of dialogue, but also a lot of description. You want to set the tone, set the place of where the people are. My story begins in the south of France in a very fancy hotel in the Riviera. Have I ever stayed in the Riviera Hotel? No. I did research on it. Was I ever swim instructor? No, never. So I did research on that. But you have to really have more description in the setting of the place. In a play, you know, you may have a description. Characters on the stage, behind them is a tree, so you know it's the woods or forest. But in a novel, you need to be more descriptive and give people a sense of what it is. And it's all dialogue, so you have to really develop the character of the setting in your mind. My first chapter, I have a setting in a house in New York City that's falling apart, you know, it needs work. And you have to describe that so your reader understands. This place may have been nice at one time, but it's got leaks in it right now. It's not that nice. And even little things, like in the first chapter, you know, the little son finds out that his dad forgot to buy milk and juice for breakfast the next day. And you have to imagine what it's like for a 10-year-old, like, well, his breakfast that morning will be jail, saltines, and peanut butter. You have to really show people what's going on, and you have to really make it so they envision what you write. And like I said, my review was really good. The reviewers really got the sets and what was happening, and they could envision it. So that's the major difference. Also, a novel is a lot longer. A play is hour and a half, 2 hours tops, in 2 to 3 acts. All dialogue, so it's
right.
They're not one's not easier than the other, but they are very different in terms of writing.
We've all thought about writing a book. I've got this idea. I was going to write this book. It's called "Yes, I Am Your Dad, and I'm a Dummy." Talk about stories with my kids. But to sit down and actually put it together, I mean, thoughts are great, but to actually implement it, I mean, did you sit down? You know, you see it all the time on TV. Character sits down at a typewriter and starts typing. Did you set time aside, or did it just, as it was coming to you, you just started writing it?
Just about Hemingway said the hardest thing for writing is looking at a blank piece of paper. And that's really true. the way I evolved it is add ideas of characters, little sketches. So I wrote a few pages of dialogue between my characters, the main characters, the husband and wife, and the children. Maybe a page or two. And then I wouldn't write anymore. I spent a lot of time laying in bed in the morning or late night before I fall asleep, thinking about what they would do next. And really, that became the pattern. I'd write a page or two, go to bed, couldn't sleep well, so I'm thinking, what's next? What are they going to do next? Where are they going to go next? And that morning, I wake up and I remember someone I thought about and make that the day's work. I really write about 2-3 pages a day. I really didn't write a lot at any given time. But I also had to do research. And that was really important because I do have scenes where I've never been in the military. I've never held a gun, a BB gun maybe. don't know what that's like. And I did research. I spoke to people who were in the military in difficult situations. And they really informed me about what things were. Some things I knew a little bit about. I live in New York City. I've worked for nonprofits. I understand some of that. But I really had to really do research to make it sound authentic. Because everything a writer wants is authenticity. And the things like how your character dresses. I thought, even though I may not have written about how my character, what he's wearing, in my mind, I know every single piece of writing about my main characters, I know exactly what they're wearing.
You had to create that, like, make it real for you, right?
Yes, absolutely. I know, Liz, his wife, I know how she wears her hair, what color nail polish she uses when she uses nail polish. It's never in the book. Their sons, their one son, the youngest son, I know what his personality is like and who his friends are and what he's been to school and what he likes, what he doesn't like. All that may not be in the narrative of the novel, but it's in my head, and it ensures that I know how to write them properly. And
it's like an actor, right? Getting into their, when an actor gets into their part, you've got to feel that and be that, yeah.
Exactly.
Have that history. You create your own, your history of it.
Yeah, I do that for every single character. I have one, I think, a good great acting teacher, Dalostovsky, Russian acting teacher. There were no small actors. There may be small parts, but no small actors. Even if it's a small part, you can really get into it and understand it. And, there's that wonderful movie, Tootsie, with Dustin Hoffman, and his agent yelling at him, when you play the role as a tomato for like 5 seconds, you were impossible to work with. And Dustin Hoffman goes, I had to understand what a tomato is. Is it a juicy tomato? Is it a ripe tomato? And he was very serious. And that's so important in my writing, too. I have in the second chapter, or the first chapter, I have a waiter there who's 2 lines, but I wanted the reader to know this waiter is a pompous ass. And I hope I'm part of that when the reader sees that, just by the things I write about him, his glance at the character, his disdain for what he has to do. I want that to be there so that the reader knows, oh, this waiter is a total asshole, snob, Even though I don't say he's a snob or an asshole, people inferred. And I have another character in the first chapter, older woman. And I never say she's, someone very intelligent, but you will know by how she looks and the words she says, she's someone of high intelligence and someone of depth and a very caring person. I never say she's a caring person who's very well educated, but by the way I describe her and the words she says, she's someone who has an incredible degree of empathy and compassion. So those words are never used.
I've gotten through the first chapter, so I would tend to agree with what you've said. And it was nice how you berated that waiter just enough to make him feel little. That was important. That was good.
And throughout the book, it's like that. Maybe there are over 100 characters that when you finish the book, Alan, at the end, I tallied up, there's 100 different characters. Many of them are not major characters. Most are not. But they're all, I really had backstories every single one in my mind. I sometimes make little notes about them, file them away, so I could go back and start to remember everything about every character. You know, so, but I really knew my characters. And in my website, I quote a famous writer called Natalia Ginsberg. She was an Italian writer in the 1930s, and she wrote fiction. And she wrote a wonderful line that says, the characters in this book are not real. They've never lived. They've never been in the places I say they've been in. But I love them so much, I wish they were alive. And I feel the same way about my characters. They've never lived. They're just in my mind. But I'd love to meet them someday because I love them all, even the ones who are pompous jerks. You know?
So when this becomes a movie, who's going to be playing the main character?
You know, my editor said that the main character would be great for Adam Sandler. They thought he would be
Adam
perfect
Sandler.
For
really? So because you've given this some thought.
Well, when she said it to me, I thought, you know, she's right. Adam Sandler has that combination of really impossible goofiness and not serious, but he's a very serious person. And the depth of his films are great, and my character could be a total doofus or a very intense person. And Adam Sandler had that film a few months ago about the basketball scout. I don't know if you saw that. It's a serious film. He plays a very serious role. He's not like one of those goofy characters in the early films, but he's funny too. And then someone else like Jennifer Aniston would be good for the life because, you know, she has that wonderful look and very serious, but very, you know, edgy sense of humor. So who knows? Hopefully they'll read it someday and say, I want to play that role.
That's amazing.
One of my reviewers said that too in the review, Amazon review, first one says, you know, Adam Sandler should read this book. So who
That's
knows?
Right. So I have a question for you. I know you've had a bunch of people reading your book as you're doing this and asking for opinions. How hard is it when somebody gives you an opinion that you maybe totally disagree? So is it, I mean, how well do you take criticism?
You know, I really try to separate myself from the criticism to an attack in any way. Because people I admire, who I respect, I take that criticism seriously. I had about, in addition to my wife, Diane, I don't know, who read it through, and she gave me, she was the first draft in 2021, and it was a mess. And she went through point by point of what did not work. And except for one thing, she was absolutely right. And I made all the changes she suggested. Then I had about five or six friends of mine. Three of them, four of them were published writers. One of them was up for Pulitzer. And another one won awards in England and London. And another one, you know, all they're professional writers. And I sent them the book, and they all read the whole thing. And they said, some of them said about copious notes. And I took their criticisms. Many times I agreed. Sometimes I didn't. But I would make changes sometimes based on what I read because someone who's really smart, who I respect, and sees it different than me, I have to understand that. And only one time, one of my best editors, the best one, he had that one change he thought I should make, and I tried to do it. But in the end, it just didn't work for me. And we discussed it at length, and he, again, he understood. But everything else he suggested is all there.
Wow.
But I really work hard to separate casual criticism with people who are knowledgeable. Another friend of mine, he's not a writer, but a good reader, he read and said, Seth, it's much too long. Take out 20%, 25%, cut it out. And it
really?
Was long. The first draft was really much longer than it's a pretty thick book. It was much, and he was right. And I had too much backstory. You know what I talked about earlier? And he said, you don't need to spoon feed your reader. Any reader who's intelligent will figure this out. Don't spoon feed. And he's right. And the version you had, I cut out a lot of what was the original version. And the other thing about writing fiction is, somebody said to me, who's a casual reader, he said, you know, I read this, but there are references in here. I'm not sure if people will understand. And at that point, I had to make a choice, you know, because when you write, I write for myself, not for someone else. Be said right away. So if I make a reference, and it's a little esoteric, you know, if someone says nobody will understand that, my response is that's what Google's for. You know, I'm not going to dumb it down. In the first chapter, you read Alan, there's references with the waiter again. Brand and Ruth McGinnis are discussing the waiter, and you know, Brand says, "Oh, his. I heard his mother was in the resistance. Like every other French person's mother was, which was being snide." And then Ruth says, "I heard that his grandmother was the mistress of President Pétain." And many people may not know who President Pétain was, but if you Google it, you find out that he was the collaboration president with the Germans, with the Nazis in World War II in France. Not difficult to Google. If you don't know it, you just Google and find out. So I did not want to eliminate things that I thought were essential in letting people know the intelligence of the characters. And to dumb down a story, any writer dumbs down a story, is not a good idea. So I did not do that. And I know there are references to the book that a reader who may not know certain history or not very well read may find it confusing. But that's what Google's for. It's a good thing.
Right. So, Seth, how did you get this published?
Yeah, I was going to say, let's talk a little bit about that whole process.
Yeah, the publishing, it's hard. You know, I work with a small independent publisher outside of Oregon. When I started going to agents, the reality was, you know, there's ageism here. Nobody wants to handle someone that's a 65-year-old guy. You know, I have no future in their mind. They want a young, hot 22-year-old. I was running into that and made the decision that I'm going to work with an independent publisher who I will work with. And there's a lot of people out there who will take your money, you know, to publish your book. And I needed somebody to edit it. That's a lot of money. No writer could edit themselves. I need a cop. It's two edits has to happen. Three edits. One is a story edit to make sure the story is cohesive. And the second edit is a copy edit to make sure once you get the story straight, the copy is correct, the words are correct. And then the proofreading when it goes before the printer. The three different edits. And everybody has to pay for that. That's what I did with the publisher. And also I need the publisher to design the cover, design the interior of the book. You know, when you look at a book, you don't think about the interior, the typeface, the spacing, all the details that are involved. It's a job. And my publisher is Luminare Press outside of all of that. It's a small women-owned business, and they were terrific. I'm very happy with their work. But the reality is, with any publisher, say a small publisher, they have no money for publicity. Unless you're John Grisham or Stephen King, publishers don't spend any money on publicity. Even my friend who was a Pulitzer finalist, you know, Phil was not a household name, so his latest book had no press. He had to do it himself. So that's what I'm doing now, and that's the way word gets out. Hopefully word of mouth. I'm doing some tour press like this, doing this speaking, which is great. My first one, but my second one. I'll be doing a meeting next week, 2 weeks in New York City. I hope to do one another one this year. And more press and social media is very important. E-Blast, I'm working with a social media consultant who's helping me that out. But any assistance to spread the word, you know, this kind of interview is great. That's the way it gets out there. But working publishers, you have to find the one that could work with you. It's really difficult, not easy.
Right now, Amazon's the only way to purchase this book, correct?
So Amazon, you can also go into a bookstore. It's available on Barnes & Noble online. It's available on Thrift Books online for a couple of dollars cheaper. I shouldn't say that, but it's the reality. Give them money on Amazon. It's available on ebook or paperback.
You didn't tell me that before I bought six copies of it, Seth.
Did you bring me a copy, Alan?
No, but I'll get you one.
I only found that out when somebody told me, oh, I got that Thrift Book, because I didn't know it was there. It's available, it's Kindle too, so that's the cheap version. That's I can't find a Kindle, so I want people to buy a paperback.
So,
and it will be available in books. You can go to any bookstore and order it online because it's Library of Congress registered. It's, you know, a real book. So you can go anywhere and order it if it's on the shelf.
So is it on Audible yet?
Not yet. I mean, that's additional funds. And I'm waiting a little bit because one thing about publishing today is the world has changed. They don't print like 1,000 copies. It's POD,
Right, print on demand or something.
Which is great because even the copy you have, Alan, there are some 10 years there, which you probably wouldn't have noticed. I do. So I'm waiting to get feedback if there are other errors I've seen. It's probably in a book of 480 pages, and maybe 5 or 6 additional errors I've not picked up yet, and the others not picked up. But once I do that, it'll be in better shape, and then I will probably go to. I have a couple people who may be interested in reading the book as an audible, but that's down the road a bit. So we'll see how it goes.
Did you have your release party yet? And I wasn't invited.
What we're doing is, I'm having. I haven't sent out anything yet, but there's going to be a book launch party at a bar across from where I live here in New York City. It's on July 24th, and it's small. It's not a big one. I'm going to have a reading, but I'm going to have events in other places. I may have an event in Boston sometime later this year. And, Alan, I may have one in Florida.
Do a book
maybe
sign.
Down there next year, like a book signing, even though it's a little past the time the book is done.
I will make that happen for you here in Florida.
You plan it and promote it for him?
We're going to do it. We're going to do it with the radio station.
Because one thing what's happened with social media, I use Facebook and Instagram and so many places, and I'm in a high school group. I've not seen these people in 50 years, some of them. And I got an incredible response to my high school website, Facebook page. Seth Boston, you remember Seth? He wrote a book. And many of the people now live in Florida, in Del Rey, Wellington, and West Palm Beach. So there's a discussion when I get down to Florida, and I say I'll be down there in January. And maybe we'll do something down there. And Alan, definitely you're on my list to talk about it, but I haven't done it yet because it's still far away. So I want to have something down in Florida. Maybe just a get together and invite all these people I've not seen in years, but have written some nice things about my. If you go to Facebook, my name is on some of the postings there. I've asked people when they read it, if they like it, to do two things: write a review on Amazon, post it on the Facebook page, and tag me. So their friends see it. And yesterday, Alan, I don't know if you know, we have a cousin, Sheila Selby. She's a distant cousin from Boston and on our grandfather's side. I only met a few times. And she read it and called me up last night. And said, I don't know you that well, but I love this book. And I said, write a review on Amazon. You go on Amazon, she's written a wonderful review. She just posted it last night on her Facebook page, and friends of hers will see it too. So that's the kind of marketing that I need right now, is that word of mouth, grassroots marketing that lets people know.
I have one last business question. Do you actually get the number of how many books have been sold?
Yes. Yeah. Right now, I've probably about 200 books in the last week.
Okay. We got to turn that into 2,000 by next week.
I definitely need to get more. Any suggestions, Alan, you're a marketing maven guru. Any suggestions, I'd love to hear. I need to get at least. The goal is the more people read it, the more word of mouth. Maybe a major publisher wouldn't have talked to me because I'm an old guy in New York City. And they say, you know what, maybe there's opportunities to publish an old guy in New York City. Or maybe someone will say Jennifer Aniston or Adam Sandler. A friend of mine, a friend of a friend, read this book, and you'd be great for the character. Any way to help out market it, I'm all for.
These publishers don't know that your father passed at 101. You have a lot of years of writing left in you.
I could, absolutely. And I'm already thinking of book number 2. But I'm waiting to get feedback on Celine's Jerusalem because there are so many characters. There are 2 of them in my mind I'd love to explore some more. But I want to get feedback from people who've read it to see what they think of which characters they want to know more about.
What a great story. Seth, I can't thank you enough. I love you, cousin.
Thank
You're
you
a good man.
Thank you. Love you, too.
Thanks,
thank
buddy.
You, Paul. Thank you, Dylan.
It was nice talking to you. Thanks.
Take care, man. Bye-bye.
Does your business have at least one employee? Did you get PPP money round 1? Did you wait too long to get round 2? Even if you got PPP round 1 or 2, or didn't get a dime of PPP, you might be eligible for money for employing people during the pandemic. The program is called Employee Retention Credits. ERC is being advertised all over the radio, TV, and internet. Companies are popping up promising you hundreds of thousands of dollars from the government. They are charging really large fees, too. The ERC program program is legitimate. The question is, are you using a legitimate company to get what you deserve? Many of these companies have popped up and will disappear after they've been paid. ERC is a payroll program. You want to trust an established and stable payroll company that will be there for you if there are ever questions from the IRS. Workgroup Payroll will evaluate what you are eligible to receive. No shortcuts, you will get paid what you deserve. Our fees are lower than anyone trying to get your business. We do not earn a dime until you receive your ERC money. Call us now to see how much money your business is legitimately eligible to receive. 561-953-2007 or email alan@workgrouppayroll.com.
Good day, Alan. Secret to my success with my buddy Don.
Alan.
Delta Don. How'd that song go?
That's how it went.
That's how it went.
You did good.
I'm just not going to sing it anymore because
you don't want to do the no.
I could.
My dad, or not my dad, Josh. My uncle used to sing that song to me. All
he
the
did.
Time. Yeah, when I was growing up.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
The whole song?
Yeah, I would. You know. Yes.
Did you hate seeing your uncle in front of your friends?
Did I hate seeing him in front of my friends?
Like, did he embarrass you in front of your friends
oh,
when
well,
he's singing
I mean,
that song?
it's a long story, yeah.
Okay.
My whole life sometimes. But no, he was good.
That's awesome.
So who do we have with us now?
We have Helena Carter. Helena, welcome to the show.
Thanks, guys. I'm glad to be here today.
Well, Helena, how are you today?
I'm doing wonderful.
Excellent. So let's start. Before we get into your business, tell us a little bit about you. Where are you from?
I'm from New York City. I relocated to the Miami area 9 years ago. Time flies.
Okay.
And I'm here enjoying Florida.
So what did you do in New York City?
I actually managed pension funds. My life is pension and benefits.
Wow. Say water for me.
Water.
It's not water?
No water.
You New Yorkers talk funny. You know what I'm talking about? So you manage a pension fund.
Yep. I used to manage the pension department at 1199 SEIU, Healthcare and Hospital Workers Union.
Wow.
And I moved to Miami, and I actually am the director of benefits and employee support services for Miami-Dade County.
Currently. Okay. So that might be fun and all, but your true passion is doing what?
My true passion is health in general, right? Preventive care, making sure people know what's out here to take care of themselves so that, you know, as they age, you know, their body ages well with them. And, you know, they're not trying to figure out how to fix it, but trying to, you know, take care of themselves their whole lives. So obviously my passion is to try to help people, you know, gain knowledge on self-care.
Don, you're trying to change it, aren't you? Or are you just trying to fix it? What are you trying to do?
I'm trying to change it?
Yeah, with your body. What are you trying to do? Fix it? Change it?
Well, I mean, yeah. Both fix it, change it, menopause, all that stuff, you know, and there's not, you can't really fix it.
I get it.
Well, you can a little. If you take B12, B12 is known to help with menopause and helps people fight through it.
Let's talk about how you've turned B12 into a business. Tell us.
So almost 2 years ago, I bought my first franchise B12 store, which is a vitamin injection IV store. And basically, we sell a variety of vitamins that help with preventive care all the way to weight loss. So a lot of people come in on a weekly basis and take their vitamin injections because vitamin injections don't go through your gastro. So they go straight into your bloodstream. So they have almost 90 to 100% absorption rate opposed to taking oral vitamins, which have less than 10.
So a vitamin injection, is it a subcutaneous or do you have to actually hit a vein? How do you do it?
So it could either be intramuscular or sub-Q. So most people get B12 sub-Q or you can get an intramuscular, but most of the other stronger vitamins are done intramuscular.
So people come on a regular basis? You have a franchise? You have a physical location?
A physical location. I have one in Boca Raton and one in North Palm Beach, both of them on Federal Highway.
So people come in how often?
some people come every week, some people come biweekly, once a month. It really depends on their style, because you can buy a single shot all the way up to a 12-shot package. So those committed have packages, and they use them every week.
And you have, like, the variety of, I mean, I've done them both before, the shots and then the IV packs.
Yeah, we have
so
a variety.
So like the Myers and the I don't know, there's always a variety.
Yeah, there's like, those are cocktails mixed, but we have straight shots of B12, vitamin C, vitamin D, glutathione, the weight loss lipotropics, zinc, magnesium, NAD, CoQ10, you name it.
So then do you have like one that's, say, just a whole multi kind of thing?
There's a couple of them are whole multi things, but like that's like one that fights immunity. So like, you know, a lot of people that have getting over or feel a cold coming on will get like a tri-immune shot, which has the zinc, the vitamin C, and the glutathione all are in one.
Right.
But most people just mix and match their shots, because we can make custom cocktails for people.
So what made you decide to get into this type of business?
Well, I was a user of the vitamins, so I loved it so much. I looked into a franchise opportunity, and it was available, so I jumped on it.
So you went from being a user to a pusher.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay.
Good one.
So why a franchise? Why didn't you just do this on your own?
Well, the franchise, you get the support, right, with the remember, these are pharmaceutical grade, so you need an MD.
All right.
I have a medical director, Teresa, who, so you need support, right? So, and also, you know, when you're buying in bulk, right, the franchise gets a better discounted rate on the actual vitamins.
Do you need a prescription for this?
You need a prescription, but we have a medical director, so she provides the standing orders for your prescriptions. So you don't need to bring in a prescription. That's all handled within the store.
I hear the dog in the background. Do you actually do pet vitamins?
I should, right?
Yeah.
Because they're annoying and they won't be quiet.
Okay.
So I know I go to a place up by us, and that's not their main thing, but they offer it. And I had to do like a consultation or whatever. You know, you have to kind of do a teleconference thing with one of the doctors just to get, your initial. And then I think it's good for like a year.
Not in our store. You just do an intake with the nurse there.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes 5 minutes. There's no doctor consultation unless you want something stronger, like semaglutide, which is, you know, the hottest trend for weight loss and diabetes management, then you would require a doctor consultation. But just for the general vitamins, the nurse can do your intake. And you only do that one time. Once you do it, there's nothing else that you need to do.
Do you do the blood work just to see where it's going in your body and what's going on a regular basis, or no? Like, if you were doing testosterone, you'd have to have that checked pretty regularly.
Right. So because the type of vitamins we sell, we don't need to do that. So a lot of people do know what they're deficient in, and they actually come in knowing that, or they find out during their annual visit with their normal MD primary care. So it's not necessary for us to do that.
So do you do any of the hormone replacement, any of that kind of stuff?
It can be requested, and the doctor would then need to do a consultation and write the prescription specifically for that client.
Mm-hmm.
But generally, no, we don't sell, because our business is walk-in. You don't even need an appointment. But for something like that, require, you know, consultation.
It's amazing down here in Florida that doctors are saying so many people are vitamin D deficient.
Right.
Right, in the sun.
In sun, right, exactly.
Because as you age, right, your body just doesn't produce like it used to be, because most of the vitamins we sell are things that the body naturally produces. It's just that, you know, as you get older, just like everything else, starts to slow down, and you just need a little help.
What's the average age of your customers?
Honestly, I have such a wide variety, so I would say most of my clients are in between their 30s and their late 70s, 80s.
So my buddy Don here used to be a bodybuilder.
Yeah.
Were you doing this stuff before, Don?
Doing what? Taking vitamins?
Well, not, I mean, injecting vitamins. There's a difference between buying a vitamin, a multivitamin at the store, obviously.
Well, I mean,
concentrating a shot.
I competed a few times years ago and was a trainer. But, I mean, I've always taken vitamins. I've been doing like you know, the IVs on and off for a few years.
You've been doing it yourself?
No. Okay. There's a couple places up by us that do it, and I just signed up with a place recently that's not their main thing, but they do that. So I got a B12 shot like a couple weeks ago, right before I left to go to Vegas, and I did a couple other things.
Do you notice the difference?
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely, you know, I mean, even certain vitamins, and like she said, it absorbs quicker in your body, so it's good. And it as we get older, and the food and all the crap that's in the food these days, you know, we're not getting a lot of nutrients and we're getting a lot of toxins. So those kinds of things help.
Yeah, like the glutathione is an antioxidant and anti-inflammatory. So, mm-hmm. And then for all of my athletes, they always come in and get the amino acid blends, right? Because it helps with muscle recovery, muscle building, and, you know, it just helps them go the extra mile when they're doing these biking and, you know, running activities and things.
Yeah, it's definitely, it's good. You know, it's not cheap, that's for sure. I mean, I know some of the places up by us, but it's worth it. And when you think about the benefits that you're going to get from it, rather than, you know, going and getting all the pills, right? Like, I mean, I've had times where I've had probably 20 bottles of vitamins, different things on my counter, you know, from the Q10 to your zinc, the magnesium, everything. I mean, you can get it all in that one pill too, but then sometimes a lot of them are separate. And especially for women, because there's different things that will benefit us.
Yeah, and I don't think my shots are expensive. They start at $25, and the highest expensive shot I have is $75.
Oh, that's
like
good.
NAD, you know?
Yeah, so up by us, the IVs are more costly, absolutely.
Double the amounts, but the vitamin injections are actually
pretty reasonable,
potent, right? Because the IVs are watered down a little bit with the saline, right? Or, you know, they're mixed. So, but when you're taking the injections, you're getting that straight.
So are you doing both? You're doing the IV and the shot, right?
We primarily do the shots. Walk-in IVs usually require appointment.
Okay.
But our primary business is the shots, honestly.
How much are your IV bags? How much does that average?
I mean, they're upwards of in the 200s, but like I said, the injections are just as beneficial, if not more, because they're straight going straight in, and you're not, you know, mixing them with anything.
It's definitely it's great. It's really great. I always see a difference in the inflammation I suffer from, so I mean, I would recommend it to anybody.
Is there an age limit, though? I mean, can a 15-year-old kid do this? With parental permission, of course.
16 and above, yeah.
16 and above. Okay, you got to explain it to me, because I take vitamins every once in a while, and the only thing I notice is fluorescent yellow pee. I mean, does that mean your body's just getting rid of all the stuff, right?
Right.
So how much is too much? That's, I mean, if you're giving me an injection, how do you know what to give me so that I'm just not deleting
standard
it?
Orders, right? So there's amounts, like most injections are 1 milliliter per injection. So, you know, most, they're already standardized. That's why we have standing orders that our medical director manages for each vitamin. And then they, like, for example, you can get B12 twice a week, but most of the others is just once a week is the maximum. Like I said, they're very potent, right? Because they go straight into your bloodstream. They bypass, you know, they don't go through your gastric system. So you don't really get rid of them like you do with the fillers and all those other things that in the oral vitamins. Hmm.
Which is better for your digestion, right? I mean, when you eliminate that from it, I would think, I mean, I don't know. I'm kind of, you know, I just
it's
guessing.
Better for absorption purposes, right? I mean, you're actually getting the benefit of most of the vitamin that you're taking and not wasting it, you know?
Hmm. So if somebody says once a week's got to be great, 3 times a week's got to be better.
Well, like I said, the standing order only calls for once a week, because then you could have too much of it in your system. Like I'm saying, it's pretty potent, so it's good stuff. So you don't need it more than once a week in most cases.
Yeah.
Have you ever had to fire a customer and said you're just being ridiculous with this?
Well, some customers, you know, have certain deficiencies which their doctors
in particular may prescribe something differently. So, you know, everybody has their needs. Like, you know, some people have had, like, you know, gastric sleeve or something like that, and they may be severely B12 deficient, or maybe they have a D3 deficiency. So, you know, they've had doctors prescribe them a higher dose. Like I said, those types of things have to go through our medical director.
Did you buy an existing franchise, or did you buy a territory and started your own?
I bought territory and started my own.
Huh. So how do you pick the location?
Well, I try to, a lot of B12 stores are in malls. I prefer the more boutique, try a personal service. So I pick strip malls that have, you know, high activity in them. So one of mine is right like on 26 and Federal Highway in Boca, and the other one is actually at PGA and Federal Highway and North Palm Beach. So those are kind of high traffic areas where, you know, a lot of people can just pop in and pop out into a strip mall rather than having to walk through a whole mall just to get a shot every week, you know?
You thought about doing the drive-through B12 shot?
Listen, if there was an available drive-through store, it might be doable.
Wow. I mean, the malls, it seems like a great place to get a lot of people, but sometimes it's got to be a pain in the butt to park in the mall, get in the store. I almost think, depending on where you are.
I know. I hate going to the mall, honestly, because of the parking situation. So that's why I prefer to have it in a strip mall where people could just pull up, jump out, get their shot and leave. It literally takes less than 5 minutes when you already have a, you know, record with us.
There's a model for a lot of small businesses that the only thing they do is put themselves next to a Publix.
Well, there's a Publix across the street from both my stores.
Okay.
But then we're not in the Publix shopping centers because most of those spaces are much larger than what we need. We don't need, thousands and thousands of square footage. So we're in smaller, strip malls, but both of them have Publix literally less than two blocks away.
So if I could buy a vitamin in a store, mm-hmm. no matter what the vitamin is, you've got this liquid alternative that could be put into a shot that you can give to beta carotene, anything like that.
I don't have all of them. Right, I have what's FDA approved, so I have about 15 of them that are the most, you know, needed and popular shots that people look for.
Huh. So on a regular basis, you know, it's funny, we had another guest on here from the salt suite where people are going in there to breathe in salt as natural healing. You'd be such a good mix with them because they've got locations. People are going in there. Yeah, that might be a really nice put together. We're going to send you an introduction to them. They're here
in
Palm
Beach. Great. Yeah, I have a lot of chiropractor and other doctor's offices, you know, that deal with pain management and other things that try to refer their clients to us for a more natural healing, I would say. You know, it helps a lot of the chiropractor's office want them to come and take the anti-inflammatories.
Okay.
So, you know, partnerships are always great.
What's your biggest challenge in your business?
Probably staffing, because it requires a nurse to be on staff at all times in order to deliver the shots.
Okay. Not a phlebotomist.
No. You have to be an LPN at a minimum.
Okay. Are you an LPN?
I am not. I'm just the owner.
I say the same thing. I'm just the owner. I get it.
I'm just the owner. My ladies are great, though. They have years and years of experience administering shots and IVs in hospital settings.
Okay.
So they're excellent.
So you always have to have like one nurse that's on staff, and then the rest can just be regular staff, or they all have to be nurses?
I only have nurses on staff, so
okay. Most
of my nurses run the actual stores, so they're there all the time.
What are your hours?
Generally, our hours are 10 to 6. We've cut back a little bit for the summer because all the snowbirds have gone, so we're closed like Mondays. But generally, our hours are 10 to 6, except Sundays. We're closed on Sundays.
Okay. How does somebody find you? Because you're a franchise. How do we get to you and not 17 other locations?
Oh, the B12store.com has a locator. You can find me that way, or I have the B12store.com.
B12. Okay. The B12store.com. And the phone number to your location?
561 660-6127.
So what's your goal with this? Quit your full-time job?
I want to retire being a multiple franchise location owner.
Excellent. Don, you going to go over there and get a shot?
Come on over.
Yeah, I'll go by.
You should.
They're right up the road.
It's close. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. Can I be the one to give Don the shot?
No, I'm sorry. Not today.
Really?
Thank you.
we're not going to air this segment. It's not going to happen.
Oh, come on. He's full of crap.
Okay, I'm full of crap. Thank you so much for being with us. We appreciate your time, and we hope you have a wonderful day.
Thank you. Pleasure talking to you guys. Please come in and visit us anytime.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Bye.
Workgroup Payroll. We love small business. From one part-time employee to 300, we want to be your payroll partner. If you have questions about employment taxes, PPP forgiveness, or employee retention credits, we can help. Your business can be getting up to $5,000 per employee for 2020 and $7,000 per employee per quarter for 2021. Let's talk about how that works for your business. Call 561-953-2007. Would you rather get better service and pay less, or less service and pay far more? It really will take less than 10 minutes to save over 20% switching to Workgroup Payroll. We make switching easy. Get the service you deserve, the price you like. If you are using a large national payroll service, we want to help you. Call 561-953-2007. Thanks for listening to The Secret to My Success. For more episodes, go on over to secrettomysuccess.com. That's secret, the number 2, mysuccess.com.